So here we are. It's a Tuesday. We have we've got Prickles, aka Ali, aka Wurzel Gummidge, and we've got Nancy Padagno in. How was the pronunciation?
Perfect.
See?
Perfect.
Perfect. Now, you are a life coach.
Yes.
And you help people through life stresses.
Mm-hmm.
How do they compare to 30 years ago? Because, you know, we're going to talk about the internet a lot today.
Right.
How it's changed.
Well, it's definitely has had an impact on personal relationships with just within the family structure. I see a lot of it more so. I've done a lot of work with teenagers and working with the youth. And so there's more parent complaints that see it as a problem more so than working with adults. But it has an impact also as an increase in cyberbullying. That's obviously a really big problem. I've seen the relationships in general. In intimacy with partners are affected because sometimes people are just so consumed with what's going on virtually than they are in real life. So,
do you know what? There's so many things. We've got plenty of time to ask the questions, but okay, we kind of outlined what we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
The things you just said, because I think there's so much there that we can go back and chat about. But you just tell us briefly, what is a life coach?
Well, for me, I'm a personal life coach. A lot of times people hear the term corporate coaching, but I do more personal life coaching. Like you said, helping people through life stressors. So it's basically for anybody who is wanting some change in their life and they need some help doing it. It could be approaching a milestone in their life, whether it be retirement, they could have unresolved grief, they could be approaching divorce, or just simply not satisfied in their relationship status and would want to work on that. Or it could be dissatisfaction with their career or job or needing being unemployed and, you know, all sorts of things. So it's for people who feel like they want to change, even if they're not clear on what that change is. I can help explore, do a life inventory, and clarify what might be the next best move for them is.
Do you know what I find fascinating is that it seemed this is just an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I've had dealings with a life coach here at Vectis Radio,
mm-hmm.
and open my eyes, and I know that people are maybe a little bit skeptical about things, but this lady's helped me an awful lot,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm looking at my eyes are open, mm-hmm. but the problem that I kind of have with our lives at the moment is that we're kind of creating the problems ourselves, aren't we? We're almost like, you know, because of the I put something on Facebook this morning about what they were telling us to do. You know, yesterday they were telling us to have a day off, don't eat meat at least one day a week. And you think, right, okay, I'll do that. The following day they're telling you, have two bars of chocolate because that's really going to help you. And you know that this time next week they'll be saying, here, we're too fat. So, you know, and that is, to me, if we took away the TV, took away, you know, the newspapers that feed us so much garbage,
mm-hmm.
Limited Facebook, maybe even banned it, or just took it off for a week, we would probably be a lot less stressful.
Mm.
And there kind of wouldn't be such a necessity for you guys.
Yeah.
But so are we giving ourselves, our own problems by doing this?
Well, I think you touch on a really good point. One of the things I have encouraged a client is a term, I don't know if you've heard this before, is taking a digital holiday. And, you know, you talk about taking away the newspapers, but, you know, a digital holiday for 24 hours. No phone, no iPad, no tablet, no computer, and that includes TV. And believe it or not, I wouldn't advise this if I didn't do it myself. And, you know, you might have a similar experience when you go away on holiday. If you're disciplined enough to leave those electronics behind, you come home, you feel you're in a different mindset. But taking a digital holiday within your own home and going about your daily business may not be conducive during a weekday, right. you know, yeah. per se.
Yeah.
But it really has an amazing, you know, impact, I think, where you reconnect with just the basics of life. And I actually found myself reading more and actually getting somewhere in a book that I had started some long time ago. You communicate verbally. You're having better human interactions. You're noticing things more, and it's, you know, and it, when I started to go back to using the technology, I found that this is me personally. I just disciplined myself, and I really wasn't even attracted to using it as much, you know. So I think it can be contagious in a sense, and having this break from all this digital and overload.
I said earlier on to Ali before you got here, a couple of hours ago, it's a disease. It's eating us up. And it is. I went on holiday for 2 weeks last year, and I had the most amazing holiday because I switched the phone off. I didn't communicate The only person I spoke to was the people that was in front of me. I didn't make any phone calls. I didn't send any texts. I didn't do anything for 2 whole weeks. And it was, to me, I looked at that and thought, this is wonderful. This is, why don't we do this more often? But the trouble is, as soon as you get back, you're back on that, unfortunately, you're back in the system, you're doing it. And once it's consumed you, that's it. It's very difficult. And I would imagine there's a lot of people out there that get sucked in and can't control it.
Yeah, there was a study done at, I think it was Stanford University in California, where they coined the term, this research project coined the term digital stress, and basically saying how digital clutter has the same impact in our lives as regular physical clutter, basically on the same concept that anything that pings or vibrates, it's competing for your attention.
Stop it. She's off. Vibrates. Yeah, we're not talking about that, all right?
Sorry.
It's fascinating because it's like, I'm thinking now, when you were talking then, I'm thinking I've got hundreds of emails that I haven't read, and that's clutter. And that bothers me. Mm-hmm. Whereas 20, 30 years ago, if there was a cluttered shelf that needed, and when you went to dust it, that was the clutter. But we're dealing with a different kind of clutter now.
Yeah.
So you know, the last 20, 30 years are changing, and they're going to continue to change. I would imagine.
Yeah, and the study also says it impedes our ability to think creatively. It affects our creative cognitive ability. Just our thinking processes in general are affected because you can't complete thoughts and you're constantly being interrupted and everything's being, your attention is in competition for everything that's going on.
Now, Ali is relatively new to technology.
I am.
Relatively new to, how long have you had your iPad?
About a year.
How long have you been on Facebook?
Since last August, September.
Now, we could have tried to save you and said, look, don't bother.
Don't do it.
How do you feel in that short space of time?
I can see what Nancy's saying. Family time. I mean, 9 times out of 10, I'm doing what I'm doing. Stan's on his emails or whatever. And Casey's on her iPad. So, yeah, family time is totally different to what it was 3 years ago.
You watch these families. I mean, we just had the Isle of Wight Festival. I don't know if you went, but even people having a wonderful time out there, they're still on their phones texting and phoning and thinking, you're out and about, have some fun.
But a lot of people, it was all the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they're watching a top act and they're still on their phones.
I mean, just, you mentioned teenagers and youth earlier on, and you know, I wasn't even thinking about them, to be honest. I know that they can be, how can we put it? You see a lot of youngsters, they're all forever on their phone. But you tend to overlook a lot of the time the bullying that can go on and so on and so forth, which obviously will give people problems as well, both the youngsters and their parents as well. So the stress levels have a kind of a knock-on effect. So, I mean, it is a fascinating thing. But I'm just interested in seeing you because you've just got on the roundabout, haven't you?
I kind of have, yes.
Would you be in a position to say, right, okay, when you get to that point where stress levels and it starts taking over your life, would you be in a position to say, right, I need to do something about this, or would you need someone like Nancy?
I think we've already, as a family, we occasionally will be, right, this weekend there's no phones, there's no iPads, no computers, and we do stuff as a family. Because I think you need to.
But do you do it? Do you stick
yes,
to it?
Yes,
you do
yes,
stick to
yeah.
it? Even so you can switch off your phone? Because I know that Stan said he was on holiday. This is Ali's other half. They were on holiday and the phone rang and he answered it. You know, some people wouldn't. They would say, "I'm not even answering it. I'm on holiday."
See,
But he was sucked in, and you know, almost in a weak moment, he's answered the phone.
No, but in fairness to him, because he's the boss and he's the manager of the island branch, he had to answer that phone. If there was a problem, even though he's on holiday, it still falls to him. Mm. But yeah, I do say to him, "Don't take the phone out. Don't this. Don't that." You know, and I think because I'm still quite relatively new, I can do that. But I know my daughter, if I was to say to her, a week without the iPad is like, you know, crikey, I've sent her to prison for a week. That's how...
Do you know, it's incredible because, you know, I know youngsters, you know, when it comes down to technology, they kind of get bad press because we all point the finger at youngsters. But I think equally now, I think, you know, people of all ages have been caught by the bug. This time last year, I was telling you about my holiday. I was having my breakfast one morning and having a nice old time. And all of a sudden, this teenager came down with her mum and sat at a table next door to us. And mum was all full of the joys, no phone on. Her daughter came down and was trying to get a signal on her phone, and she just threw the phone down on the table and said, "Can't get no signal." And I said to the wife, I said, "Come on, eat up, we're going." I couldn't stand being around the stress of this kid that couldn't. I'm thinking, you've got all this beauty around you, you've got all this, you know, this warmth, this sunshine, you're on holiday, and there you are, you're worried and you're stressed out about the you know, your mobile phone not getting a signal.
But that's down to us as parents as well, isn't it, to perhaps limit that time. I mean, my daughter at 13 has grown up from 4 years old, you know, from nursery into school. Everything's computer-based, isn't it? So it's been there for as long as she can remember.
I think you hit on a really important thing about the parenting, and it's harder now, I think, to set those boundaries. And it sounds like you have it works well in your household. That's fantastic. But to put these restrictions on kids is not easy anymore. And you mentioned the being on holiday and how much it bothered you. And I kind of look at this as an evolution, because back in the day when we had, you know, film cameras, you know, I was guilty of this myself. Anywhere I travel to, I'm just looking through the lens, click, 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 click. And you know, and I wasn't experiencing... you know, visiting the place I was visiting. Now it's not film cameras, it's cell phones and video, and more often than not, I bet you people are, you know, posting on Facebook play by play of what they're doing on their holiday. So it's...
Do you ever get like, you know, if you could really do and ask the questions, and I know that you it's probably a case of someone makes contact, so you then sit down and you start talking. But do you ever get frustrated enough to think, do you know what, I'd like to go up and ask that person that question, purely and simply because what he's done. I mean, going back to a really horrific incident that happened a couple of years ago when Lee Rigby was attacked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of think, what is in people's minds when they don't go to help? First thing they do is pull out their phone and they video it. And you think, where's your mind at? Do they need help? Do you look at them and think, you need to chat to somebody? You seriously need to talk to somebody, because that's not right. The first thing you do when this horrific thing is going on is reach for the phone and film it.
And that seems to be the culture nowadays. You know, that's what people do. It's a voyeuristic society now, and it gets used on the news all the time. How, you know, you watch a news broadcast now, and how many video clips are we watching that are from people's personal cell phones? It's quite a lot.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, what would you... I mean, just say, for instance, if you could go up to somebody like that, What would you say to them? How would you react? How could you get them to see it? This isn't acceptable.
I guess try to see what sense of responsibility that if they had as like is you know how do you, how is this helping? It could help in the long run for a prosecution or a conviction or something, but immediately this is a serious crisis. This is a disaster. You know, how can you best, do you really think by videotaping is this, you know, just try to get them to take some sense of ownership and go with that and see what their response was. You know, is this how you think you can best help this situation?
Do you ever think that, you know, crikey, is that's what these people going through these people's minds? I can't help you. You know, does there ever come a point when you think, God, you know, I could, you know, if I was talking to a housewife that was stressed out because of this, and you can talk to them and you can make a communication and a connection, and she makes an adjustment to her life and everyone's happy. But is there ever a time when you look at these people and think, you're beyond fixing?
Well, honestly, I don't think I would be, you know, in the business I'm in if I believe that. I do believe that there's goodness in everybody, and you know,
what's the toughest challenge without going into obviously because you have to be confidential. But right. What's the toughest challenge you've had?
Well, my coaching business, I'm building up my clientele right now. When I was actively working in the States, I've worked with a lot of various populations. So it's kind of I don't know if I'm going to answer your question fairly because I've worked with the mentally ill mostly. And the most challenging was people that had a severe and persistent mental illness. I don't think that really applies to your question. Sure. So sorry about that.
Okay. It's just it's a wonderful thing, the mind. But I think I watched a film recently. It was a film called Lucy, and it was we only use 10% of our minds, our brain power. Mm. And you think, thank God for that, because I think if we really dug to the depths, we would be doing so much more bad stuff. I'm pretty sure of it. But it's an interesting thing. But you work a lot with the military.
Oh.
So my son's in the military, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know that there will obviously come a time when I'm guessing that they would all receive some kind of coaching, some kind of So I mean, what are the? It's probably a straightforward answer. What are the general problems that you face?
Well, I worked with families of the military, of the service members, and I did some work with indirect work with the service members, more so doing trainings and stuff. There would be, weekends and stuff where they would have mandatory sessions and, you know, do a workshop on stress management or even how to get a good night's sleep. You know, the PTSD is what comes up a lot in combat stress, are the terms you hear a lot when you hear about veterans. That's dealt on a more personal level. It's not something that's dealt in a group, or you're not going to have a loose group about trauma. It's more of a therapeutic issue versus a coaching issue. But the need for it, yes, absolutely. When I was working as a consultant with the American military, I worked more so with the children, with the adolescents, and how they're affected by military lifestyle and the deployments, extended deployments, and whatnot. So,
there's so many different things that we could chat about, and there's a few things that popped into my head, and I've got to be careful what I say now because I don't want to highlight who this actual person is, but I know of someone he was put in a private school. So every now and again, they would bung him in private school, and probably not bung him in, but I mean, you know, and it kind of as not massively affected him out. You wouldn't see the difference, but you do know, and you hear stories of people, that kids that have been put into a boarding school, and there's that feeling of rejection, and that feeling of rejection follows them through their life. I mean, those are the sorts of things that you sit down and help people with?
It's a lot of people don't have that insight, you know, as adults. You know, they they're good reporters of their lives, and they can give me play-by-plays and what they think was impactful or had an effect on them, their version of it. By the time you talk about things, you know, you talk about this rejection, I don't think anybody would ever come out and say, oh, I feel rejected, my parents sent me away to boarding school. It's a whole slew of other after effects, other issues that transpire as a result of that. Is it rejection? It could be. That could be one of the issues. But more often than not, it's all the other stuff, you know.
Okay. Well, look, I've been told I've got no empathy. So is it something you could help me with? I mean, you know, people say, oh, you got no empathy, you never cry at anything. Yeah, I do. I get emotional like everyone else. But, you know, it's something I don't know. I found out something when I was a youngster, found out my dad wasn't my dad. And it's almost like, I don't know, there's that feeling of you come into this world alone, you leave it alone. And, you know, OK, someone says something horrible and you say, right, okay, fine, and you just walk away and you just ignore it, and that's that. And there's no, you know, what can you, it doesn't get under your skin, you just walk away right from it. And I think, well, is there something that would I want to be fixed? No, because I don't feel broken.
Then it's not a problem.
No. So when do you know you've got a problem then?
You know you have a problem if it's affecting your daily life, your daily activities, or if it's affecting your work productivity. You know, the easiest example is if you know you have a problem with addiction to, say, drugs. You know, if you're consistently showing up an hour late for work, and, you know, it's clearly that's going to go notice. I mean, that's an extreme example. Stress can get in the way by other more subtle symptoms, as, you know, by not being able to sleep well at night, having headaches or stomach aches. So when it starts interfering, and sometimes it takes interfering with your life, and sometimes it takes somebody else on the outside, like a it could be your partner or a family member, or oftentimes it's a friend that may not see you on a daily basis, and they're more likely to see changes in your behavior or your thinking or attitude.
If you don't see the changes, you know that there are, not in yourself, maybe in other people. If you don't see the changes, does that mean you've got a problem? Because you're not looking at it in, you know, because I'll be honest, my wife has been through an awful lot of stress in the last couple of months, and I never really noticed until somebody pointed out to me, did you know your wife's going through a lot of stress and heartache at the moment? No, didn't realise. So is there, you know, what are the signs? Just, you know, in yourself, there's an element of you might not see them until you find a way or you speak to somebody. And I know that the life coach I was talking to a good 4 or 5 years ago, I had a conversation with her, and her name is Maggie Curry, and she pointed out a number of things. And one of the things, my wife used to make me the same roll every day, ham and mustard, and it was the same every day, and it must have been, and I didn't see this at the time. It was really boring for me, but it must have been really boring for her as well, making the same roll. But, you know, that's the way it was. And all of a sudden now I'm having ham some days, I'm having pork some days, and chicken. I'm very lucky, but it's almost because I never noticed it. She never noticed either. It took somebody else, like someone like yourself, that actually noticed the things.
Yeah.
And now we do things like, and Maggie would say, walk home a different way. Do something different, because otherwise your life becomes mundane. And I say to the wife, every time she'll say, where should we eat? Where are we going to eat? She'll say, where do you want to eat this? I always say, let's go and eat outside. Because we probably eat outside during the summer months about once, maybe twice a week. And you just know that by going outside, it kind of brightens up your day a little bit, rather than doing the same old thing.
Sometimes it is a simple little intervention to, if monotony is the problem and you're looking for variety, do something different.
But is it the problem, and how do you know when it is?
It's only a problem if you think it's a problem. You know, if somebody from the outside, you know, sees you and your spouse interacting, and you two are happy with that, but they might think something's a little bit off. I think it's up to you whether you think it's a problem or not.
It's a fascinating thing, because I never looked there and I thought, you got problems. Someone else has said you got problems.
It does. you know, it just supports the reason all the more. It's that it's okay to talk about these issues, and it's okay to talk about your stress. And it, like you said, it all very often takes somebody on the outside to point things out.
But then I'm guessing that we get to a point where there is stress in our lives. Yes, there are issues, but we can't see it. So if you can't see it, how
do you can arm yourself with the information. I believe you were starting to ask what are some of the symptoms of stress. Is that, you know, like I was saying before, it's a very individual thing, and stress affects everybody differently. But some of the more common things, you know, it affects us cognitively. It affects our thinking. We become more forgetful. You find yourself worrying a lot. It also affects us emotionally, where you could be a little bit more moody. But people are more likely to notice the behavioral symptoms, where things like, you know, you're not getting a good night's sleep. Insomnia is a very common form of stress. Frequent headaches, frequent stomach aches, fidgetiness, pacing around. Sometimes
I'm stressed. Sometimes. I've done all those things today.
But, you know, so when does it become a problem? Well, it becomes a problem if it's getting to the point where you can't get yourself out of bed, or, you know, your work is being impacted, or you can, oftentimes, if your personal relationships are being affected, you know, if you're becoming more withdrawn, or people just don't want to be around you because you want to spend too much time worrying about this or worrying about that. And sometimes people do have the insight, you just know that something's not right, and things could be better. And that, more often than not, that could be a sign of stress.
You know? Okay. Well, look, I'll be honest here. The last few weeks, months, I think to myself, well, you're not sleeping as well as you should be. But then you kind of think, well, do you need less sleep as you get older? Now, Ali and I, we're roughly the same age. How many hours do you sleep a night? And do you think, like, I've had a good night's sleep most mornings when you wake up?
See, I have never, ever been a good sleeper. I get 3 to 4 hours sleep a night.
So what? Why?
For years and years and years.
So are you then tired during the course of the day?
Not particularly, no. No. And I think some people function on 3 or 4 hours of sleep, whereas others perhaps need 9 or 10 hours of sleep. It depends on you. But you need a self-awareness, don't you, to actually pick up when anything's wrong.
Yeah. In the last 10 years, have you ever picked up, anything wrong?
I was very, very stressed out when I was working in A&E, and a lot of that was trying to have to change your mindset from being in recess and perhaps losing a patient to then going and plastering a 2 or 3 year old child's arm, you know, because you need to flick your emotions so quick between what you're doing. And I found that really, really stressful. And going home, I kind of really had a bad job of turning the hospital off because I replayed and replayed and replayed my day. And I suppose it's kind of different that I wasn't doing the gardening. It was people's lives, and if it wasn't spot on, it could be somebody's life at risk. So yeah, I found that really, really stressful, which is why I left.
See, I can understand that. I look at that and I think, oh crikey, radio presenter, stress, nothing. But doing the job that you were doing, wow, that
different would be. People have different stresses, don't they? And there are different people that can cope with an awful lot of stress. I mean, I worked there for nearly 15 years. You know, and then I think because my littling got to an age and I realised I was coming home and not switching it off, you know, I wasn't all happy, smiley mummy. I was sort of, oh my goodness me, what a day I've had. And it was impacting, like you say, Nancy, on home life, which is why I stopped doing it.
Are there techniques, are there things that you can do, you know, just say, for instance, I have maybe a sleep problem and can't switch off for some reason, it's going round and round in your head, you know, obviously you're past it now, aren't you, because you've finished the job now, because it's not such a stress, but was there something Ali could have done?
Well, it sounds like, generally speaking, there's all sorts of rituals people can do to kind of decompress from your day. And one of the things that I've worked a lot with clients in the past, and even with myself, is if you have it, if you're stressful at your work, use your commute time to kind of bridge that gap. But if you live on the island and everything's so close, you know, you don't have that time. So it takes discipline to create some sort of structure, so you have kind of like this threshold or a bridge, if you will. And whether it's, you know, listening to your favorite album full blast with your headphones on, or, you know, or if you have to go for a walk before you're going to be approachable and you want to be the good mother and the good spouse, but before you walk through that door or before everybody comes home. I mean, it really is different for everybody.
That's what I used to do when I used to finish my shift. I used to come out of work and the 15 or 20 minutes drive home, stereo up, full power in the car, windows down, and it was just a 15 minute try to be myself before I got home.
Yeah. So, but the good thing is you at that moment in time, you know, you actually realise that that was your way of dealing with it. There's so many people out there that are probably, you know, unaware, and that's probably leads to the problem, doesn't it? I would imagine. I'm just guessing. I don't want to do your job for you.
But like Ali said, you do have to have some sense of self-awareness.
Yeah.
But not everybody may have that. And that's where, you know, I'm likely to see clients come through the door because they don't have that, but they just know something's wrong and it's affecting, you know, their family life or some area in their life.
Do you see mainly men, mainly women? Is it across the board 50-50?
It's a mix. I think maybe a little bit more women, mainly because I think women are more likely to talk about their own issues than men are.
Why do you think that is? Is it just because it's a macho thing?
It could be. I think at the risk of sounding stereotypical, I think women are, like you used the word empathy before, are just generally more empathetic and a little bit more aware, I think, on the feeling side of things.
And men just got this thing about getting on with it. Just get on with it.
Men just don't do feelings, do they? Yeah. Men just kind of switch it off like it's not happening. See?
I've got feelings.
Not many.
I have. It is a fascinating subject. It really is. I mean, you know, it affects just about everybody, I would have thought. Mm. And does it? I'm guessing the stress would lead to depression and worse.
It could. Stress itself, it's not an illness, but it can lead to or exacerbate other illnesses. You know, and particularly you see the extreme cases in men. For instance, they're more likely to have cardiac disease as a result of a buildup of stress, and whereas. Other times it can exacerbate, if you have a serious like autoimmune disease, then obviously you're going to be very sensitive to just about everything. But stress can lead to, I'm certainly not medically trained and I can't speak to exactly how, but that's where you would want to go to your GP. And if you are having physical symptoms, because stress can be very, you know, can be very physical, it's very anxiety, you know, your body is feeling all sorts of, you know, different discomforts, so.
Is routine good then? Just so my wife loves routine. Everything is, you're sorting out what you're having for tea the night before whilst you're having the previous tea, you know, and you think, so that's your way of dealing with life, and that's your. But I just think that's a little bit sort of. I look at it and I think, come on, let's do things differently. And then you may have a different, fresher outlook, and you may be a little bit happier doing those things. So yeah. Is routine good?
Well, I'm all for structure and balance. Yeah, but more sense of balance of, I guess, structure, and you know, I always like room for spontaneity. How do you plan for spontaneity? It's kind of an oxymoron.
So, what's the most common, common problem that you, the cause? What's the most common cause?
You mean as far as
stress and all sorts?
A lot of it is dissatisfaction with their relationships that they're in. And also they're just dissatisfied about their work situation, whether they feel like they're, you know, in a dead-end job, they get absolutely no satisfaction but feel, you know, trapped into that. And the same, I could say the same for being in a marriage. Unfortunately, I see that a lot.
Do you have, you have the same kind of problems as we do. So what makes you different to us? I mean, is it because you can understand your mind and a little bit more, you spend a bit more time? Because, I mean, you're human, just like you. And,
yeah.
You know, like, just like me. I mean, I'm kind of human too, even though I've got no empathy, apparently. what makes you different?
Well, I think stress is in general, it's an individual thing. We all have our past. We all have different upbringings and different trainings, different schools of thoughts, different cultures.
Yeah.
Are you implying that I don't have stress? Is that
no?
Oh,
not,
okay.
Not at all.
I wasn't sure.
Not at all. It's a bit. It's a bit like just say, for instance, if you were a hairdresser, somebody else would cut your hair. So you know, if just say, for instance, you needed to go and spend some time with a life coach, you think, well, I'm a life coach, it don't matter. But you know, you probably I'm guessing you would need to speak to another life coach.
Well,
or?
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. What you're saying. Yeah, with all my training that I've ever had, it's always been supported that you should always have a mentor or your own coach or therapist in the work you're doing, because you have to maintain your sanity. And you know, Ali, the example you gave of working in A&E, you know, I think maybe, I don't know if this would have helped or not, but being able to talk to a trusted colleague or, I don't know, a supervisor or somebody maybe about that to get it out of your head and onto somebody else or something.
We kind of did, and so, we used to try and have a group cup of tea in five minutes, but obviously it wasn't always possible.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
But I think, I don't know if this is furthering answer your question or not, but as far as job satisfaction, I've always thought that if you're in the line of work where you have a beginning, middle, and an end, like you mentioned, somebody who cuts your hair, or you can look at mechanics or even bakers or things like that, you kind of always, you're always going to get a result. So you're going to have some satisfaction in professions or vocations where you don't, it's not a little bit more obscure, like working in the A&E. You know, yeah, you might send somebody off the door and they're better off, or they might not be. Mm. So I think that sense of closure, if you will, has an impact on our stress levels, particularly in the workplace. So that's where, you know, myself always working in the people profession and helping professions, you do have to learn to celebrate the small successes, otherwise you will burn out.
Okay, it's an interesting thing. I hope I make myself clear. I wasn't able to dig at you or anything like that. It's just the fact that who helps you when you got issues. You know, it's like when you go to the hairdresser, somebody cuts your hair. If you're a hairdresser, you still get somebody to cut your hair. Well, if you're a doctor and you've got a problem with something you can't see or reach, maybe you know, behind, then another doctor will examine you. You know, that's
right.
That's the point.
I see what you're saying. It's about building your support system, and it may not be a formal support system. It could simply, you know, having an honest conversation, a heart to heart with your partner or with a friend, or, you know, going back to social media. Some people use that as a form of coping. So who knows?
Would you? I mean, how many years have you been doing this?
About 20 plus years.
20 plus years.
Yeah.
So you've kind of seen the difference with what's gone on and how you know, the changes, because obviously the internet is more prominent now and so on. So I want to talk about that, but what we do is take a break first of all, and then we'll come back and we'll do that. And how the change, how it has changed. Has it changed for the better? Has it changed for the worse? So that's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. If you do want to give us a call, you can. 240-666, 240-666. We're here until 1 o'clock today.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Call them on 01983 240 240. That's 01983 240 240.
White Fibre, the island's fastest broadband. But don't just take our word for it. Here's John Willison from Cowes.
The best thing about White Fibre is their speed of response. And you're actually talking to a human being who you know is local. It's not transferred over to India or Scotland. It's a local person.
Get the island's fastest broadband free for 12 months. Call 240-240.
WhiteFibre.com.
24-month contract required. Fastest speeds available in all cabled areas.
Westridge Golf Centre have the island's only pay-as-you-play golf course with no booking of tee times required. They currently have a challenging 9-hole par 31 golf course, currently under expansion to become an 18-hole par 64 course. Check them out now, www.westridgegolfcentre.co.uk. Westridge Golf Centre, Brading Road in Ryde.
Fretbuzz.net is the place to go for all the latest music reviews, news, photos and more, covering island bands to established acts from across the globe. The guys at Fretbuzz will give you their unique view on the music world. As well as music reviews, Fretbuzz now offer bands and musicians a range of promotional services, from photo shoots, video show reels to advertising and features on the site. It caters for all budgets and requirements. Just call 07576 138 337 today for more information. So whatever you're looking for, visit us at fret-buzz.net for all your music needs, or find us on Facebook by searching Fretbuzz Music Reviews.
Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, saving lives across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Flying 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Our helicopter is called out many times a day and we can reach anywhere within the Isle of Wight, including the helipad at St Mary's Hospital, within 20 minutes. Funded solely by donations, we rely upon the generosity of the public to keep us flying and saving lives. To see how you can help, please check out www.hiow-airambulance.org.uk.
Whitesight, here's how it works. You need glasses? Visit an optician, then bring your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street, Ryde. Whitesight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses, stockists of Dior, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Ban and many more. They are an independent retailer, so you can shop locally for first-class service and great glasses. You'll be spoilt for choice. Either visit them in Cross Street, Ryde, or check out www.whitesight.co.uk.
White Fibre, the island's fastest broadband. But don't just take our word for it. Here's John Willison from Cowes.
The best thing about White Fibre is their speed of response. And you're actually talking to a human being who you know is local. It's not transferred over to India or Scotland. It's a local person.
Get the island's fastest broadband free for 12 months. Call 240-240.
WhiteFibre.com.
24-month contract required. Fastest speeds available in all cabled areas.
This is Vectis Radio. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Vectis Radio.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone, 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
So, here we are then. We're back. It's Tuesday, Lunchtime Social Debate. We've got Ali in. We've also got Nancy Padagno. Have I done that right?
Yes, you did.
Twice now.
Twice.
Not bad at all. Now, Nancy is a life coach, and we were talking about the changes in the last 20, 30 years. You would have seen a lot of the changes, obviously, for social media, the internet, and so on and so forth. I mean, first of all, is it making it worse? Is it giving us more of a problem, or is it actually helping?
Well, I have to say it's a little bit of both. We've been talking about how, more so the negative impact of the social media. But on the flip side, it actually helps some people who are more on the shy side. And I'm relating more that my experience of working with teens. If they're more introverted and have a harder time making friends, it's actually been a great venue for them to kind of find a voice. There is some benefit for that. And also, nowadays, I'm sure you both see just about a lot of businesses rely on social media.
Sure.
And it's one of their main venues for advertising and making promotions and whatnot. So there are, you know, it's I'd like to say it's a little bit of both. You know, what you hear more is obviously the negative impact, and I think, you know, I don't know what the balance is. There's so many research studies out there that will talk about, you know, the effects in these scholarly research studies that are a little bit hard to read for me. But
well, look, I mean, I sort of said what I said about the internet and so on and so forth. Made it more difficult, and does it give us more problems? Yeah, I think I'm aware that there will be, you know, some plus sides as well. Mm. And you know, and it is just a question: have we given ourselves a bit of a problem? Right? I mean, I made a flippant remark yesterday because I knew you were coming in. I was talking to the wife yesterday, and I said, you know, she's not on Facebook, and she's not on Facebook because she just doesn't like the fact that people pour their heart and soul out there, and, you know, in some ways to complete strangers. And you know, that kind of bothers her. But I said look at it this way. I said it could be a case of these people, when you see people saying, they just put it out there, oh, I'm not happy, or I'm having a really, really bad day, and I look at it and I think that's kind of attention seeking. You know, you must look at it and think, oh, you need to speak to somebody. You'd spot the sign straight away. But I mean, I don't think you have to be an expert to wonder, hey, hang on a minute, this person is putting some stuff on Facebook that is, it's, oh, I'm feeling really dreadful and unhappy today, I'm really lonely, and so on and so forth. I mean, you look at that and you think, right, that's a cry for help. Yeah. But is it, you know, looking at it from the plus side, there, you know, I used to know people that used to cut themselves years ago. And is that a similar thing? So are they now, are some of these people now thinking, well, instead of cutting myself, I'm going to put this out on Facebook because it kind of relieves the stress? Or does it not work in the same way?
I think cutting yourself is definitely a lot more severe, for obvious reasons. I agree with you. It does seem it's very attention-seeking, but what they have to gain for that is validation. I would think that would be, you know, what they're looking for is for validation, and hopefully people will comment and maybe build them up, or you know, which I guess you could kind of say the same thing for people who cut. But it's, and the danger with making a posting like that on a Facebook post, could, you know, you just open yourself up to, you know, all sorts of things, and you do increase your risk of getting, you know, adverse comments and potential predators and things.
Sure.
Like that.
I mean, I look at it two ways. I look at it in a kind of a negative way by thinking, oh, come on, have a bit more respect for yourself. So, but I also put it on, I also think to myself, I think, oh, hang on a minute, you know, this person is kind of sad, and if one of your friends was kind of feeling sad, you'd want to cheer them up. The only difference is that, you know, the Facebook friends, that's what it is. A lot of the time, you're just Facebook friends. You're not friends.
It doesn't go beyond that, yeah.
That's the thing that I've got to get my head around. But, you know, I find it kind of sad that people can, you know, pour their heart out and say that they're feeling really, really sad. And genuinely, I do believe that, you know, if we were friends, we would then get in touch and say, hey, come on, we're going to take you out for, or, you know, come and tell us all about it, or whatever. Yeah. So there's two ways of looking at it. There's the negative way and there's the positive way. We've got a call coming through, so let's find out who it is. Hi, who's this?
Hello, Ian, it's Jay.
Hello, Jay, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good, I'm fine. Did you want to, have you got a question for Nancy?
Yeah, I was just wondering Nancy's opinion, if Nancy might feel that, to some degree, we're just papering over the cracks for the most part, if, you know, the main upsetter in society is stress. What if most of the systemic dependence, the underpinnings of society itself, are actually based on the principles of stress? How do we then, you know, address the individual self if the functionings of society are predominantly based on stress?
I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
Well, we've got sort of like ecological degradation, we've got land degradation, pollution, you know, and these are all things that predicate our economy, our jobs. So if the very things that we've designed to live by are actually doing us harm, how can we then, on an individual level, address stress? when we're not addressing the root cause, if you see what I mean.
Okay, I think I understand what you're asking. I think you're saying, you know, stress is definitely out there. It is all around us. So it's not a matter of avoiding stress altogether. It's a matter of managing it. So I think it's up to each individual to, you know, gain some self-awareness and know what your own personal triggers are, and knowing what works for you. So you can't possibly avoid stress in life. It's everywhere.
that's self-evident. That's what I'm saying. Isn't that the issue? You know, are we accepting that blindly? Does there have to be so much stress in society? Is it perhaps the systems that we've designed that are prevailing so much stress? You know what I mean?
I think so. I mean, it's quite a global question you're asking. I wish I had more of an answer for you. You're looking at the larger picture here, which...
Well, it's the macro effect and the micro, you know, and that's kind of what I'm addressing. Mm. We can tinker all we like on the micro, but if we don't start addressing the macro, then these things are just going to keep perpetuating. If there are actual blind spots. And I suppose a lot of it alludes to what you said earlier, but people don't want to focus on what we consider to be the negative, what are, you know, society's problems. But the longer we do that, the longer we don't address them, because it's uncomfortable, we're just going to perpetuate, the individual stress, because we're not addressing the root causes.
And you're touching on the aspect of change, and you, sometimes just mentioning that word change in somebody's life or lifestyle. That can cause anxiety right then and there. Everybody acts differently to change.
Yeah, and climate change, within that change, being a big one of, you know, big part of it. We are biological mammals on the planet, so whether we're aware of it or not, it's got to be psychologically affecting us and stressing us.
Would it be fair to say that, you know, even if we lived in a perfect world, and the chances of us ever living in a perfect world are pretty remote, we'd still need some, we'd still have a bit of stress in our lives?
I would say so, because even at the base level, you still, you know, tribal folk and that, they're still worried about food and water supplies and things like that. However, you can, you know, we're intelligent enough these days to design as best as we can to preempt these things.
And stress can also be, we're talking about the negative aspects of stress, but it also can be a motivating thing, and there's something called positive stress, which ultimately helps you in a dangerous situation.
I think that's the sort of situation we're in societally now, where we're feeling these stresses ever more intensely. However, the problem is that we're not reacting, I think.
Right. Okay. What do you think, Nancy?
I think you're talking on such a global level.
It's one and the same, though, isn't it? You know, the Earth is a biosphere, and ourselves, on an individual level, we're just biospheres. You know, we're just made up of bacteria and microbes and all sorts of juicy stuff. But we react and act much in the same way, you know, as an ecological system. I think we know this at our root levels, but we don't know A, how to converse about it, and then B, what to do about it, predominantly because we're not addressing it.
Well, it sounds like a great basis for a thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, well, there's been many written.
Hey, look, Jay, thanks for bringing up those interesting points that you've made.
Cheers.
Thanks for your call.
All right,
cheers,
bye-bye.
Now. It's wonderful to know that I'm made up of juicy stuff, and you are as well, and Nancy is too.
Yeah.
I think that's a fascinating way of putting it, but I can see where he's coming from, but at the end of the day, someone has to rule, and someone has to do the work, and whichever perfect world we live in, you're always going to have some kind of stress. It's just the levels that will change, isn't it? I'm guessing.
And sometimes you make your own stress, don't you?
Mm, yeah.
And sometimes people work better with being under stress, I guess.
That's the that's the positive aspects of stress. You know, you always hear people, oh, I work best under pressure. Well, some people might, some people may not, but it's an individual.
A balance that you've got to, you know, you've obviously, anyway, look, we've run out of time, so is there a website that we can look at and know, check you out?
I'm at newenglandlifecoaching.com.
Okay, newenglandlifecoaching.com.
Yes.
Okay, and you're based on the Isle of Wight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be fooled by the accent. That'll go. A couple of years' time, you'll be like, from Giles, you will. In a couple of years' time, you'll be talking like that.
With a tractor outside. And we're thinking,
here, you're a life coach talking like that. Nancy, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming in, Wurzel. And we shall see you next Tuesday, yeah?
Yep.